weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to Vetta De Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It's Friday, the 30th of August, and you're listening to Game On. Coming up on the show today, we'll be live to Paris to Siobhan Madigan for day two of the Paralympics. Alan Cawley is with me in studio. He's going to talk about Shamrock Rovers. Pretty good European draw, plus all the Premier League and League of Ireland action. As always on Friday, we'll have racing with Jane Mangan, plus we will have golf with Greg Allen. And before the show ends, Roisin Urine is going in the final of the S13 100 metre backstroke final in Paris. So we will have live commentary on that. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552, or you can find us on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along, Alan Cawley. You're so very welcome. It was a pretty good day for Irish football, well, for Shamrock Rovers. They got a decent draw, I have to say, in the draw today, Alan, with the glamour tie of Chelsea, and then teams that look pretty okay for the Conference League.
I think it's better than decent, to be fair, Marie. Good evening and happy Friday and all that. But yeah, it's better than decent. I was watching it earlier on, Marie, and it's an incredible draw. It really is. For a team that has struggled all season, I suppose, in terms of domestically and their league form, this has really kind of reignited their season, because they can put, as I said a couple of weeks back, even when they were getting ready for the playoff, it wasn't the worst thing in the world that they were knocked out of the Europa League playoff, because this is their level, and all our teams, I suppose this is what you're vying for, and that's why the Conference League was brought in, for teams similar to ourselves, countries the size of ourselves and leagues like ourselves. And the draw has been absolutely incredible, Marie, because if you look at it, you mentioned the glamour tie of Chelsea away from home, which is fantastic. Logistically as well, it's a brilliant tie, because if you look at the team they got drawn against, which would be the furthest away, Bosnia, to have that at home so they don't have to travel cost that would they'd incur there. They have the new Saints from Wales, which is a very, very winnable tie, and I think that's even more important than the glamour ties, is the fact that they're in with teams that they can beat and earn even more money that's already on the table, because obviously every penny counts in terms of the winning the matches and draw matches. Nicosia as well, Apoel Nicosia, to have at home so they don't have to travel there. They have Larne away, only up the road, which is obviously a big derby match.
He's lied with that,
which is brilliant.
Bus, yeah.
And then the furthest one away to have Rapid Vienna, which is only Austria. So it's a dream draw, it really is. And in terms of, I suppose, the realistic nature of the fact that I feel they could do some damage, I said this here a couple of weeks ago, I really think the Camry, because the last time they were in the group stage, they were going for the league title, and it was a major distraction because they were obviously trying to win the league here. It was very tight at the top at the time, and they just couldn't focus heavily on the European adventure, if you like, and they were having to play second string teams against good teams as well, and they were being punished heavily in those games. Whereas now they can focus solely on this, because if you look at the league title, and I know we'll talk about it later, Shelburne and Derry are at the top, both of them are playing tonight, but I don't think Shamrock Rovers have it in them to come back and win, go on the run that's needed. And now with this, obviously, in the this will become to the forefront of their mind now. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant draw, and I think they could do very well.
Yeah, it's really exciting, definitely. And as you said, the glamour tie Chelsea, which isn't too far away as well, so I'm sure there'll be big support heading over to Stamford Bridge. Manchester United are going to be facing Jose Mourinho in the Europa League. He's the manager of Fenerbahce.
That'll make it tasty, Marie.
It will.
Yeah, Jose, just when we thought maybe he's kind of winding down his career and he's gone out to Turkey. So yeah, that'll be amazing fixture as well. And it's been exciting, the draws, hasn't it, seeing the new format with the home and away set up. And obviously we're used to teams being in a group and then you're playing them home and away. I think it's freshened things up, certainly from a I suppose an interest point of view as well for us. We love these tournaments anyway, but I think the Champions League one certainly needed freshening up, particularly that early group before Christmas. I felt there was games in that were becoming non-events really, and then obviously the second part of the competition after Christmas used to be always brilliant and you get into the knockout games. I think we might see that from an early stage now with some of the ties and some of the games, and I'm really looking forward to it starting.
Absolutely, same as. Okay, hold all those football thoughts. We are going to Paris now. Siobhan Madigan is live there for us. Siobhan, how are you?
I'm good, Marie. How are you?
Gosh, you're looking.
I'm enjoying the rain here today.
It
makes a change.
Oh, wow, because it's sunny here now for a change. Everyone's getting excited about Coldplay in the next few days.
Oh, yeah, I've heard great things about them last night. So, there's nothing like a bit of Coldplay in Croke Park, is there?
Well, I'll tell you tomorrow because I'm going tonight, Siobhan.
Well, why not? Why not?
Anyway, enough about Coldplay in Croke Park. What is happening in Paris today?
Yeah, absolutely. Day two of the Paralympic Games and more swimming finals to look ahead to in the not too distant future. Clontarf's Ellen Keane as well as Limerick's Roisin Ní Rian both in action back out at the La Défense Arena. In what's her swan song games, the defending champion Ellen Keane booked her place in the SB8 100 metre breaststroke final at 7:21 this evening, having jointly won her heat this morning in 1 minute 24.59 seconds. She tied the heat alongside the Briton Brock Whiston, but afterwards she spoke with Eamon Horan.
I already won a gold medal in Tokyo, and there's so many things that are out of your control. The only thing that's in your control is your performance and just making sure that you're ready on the day and you give it your all. So, like, I know I have that gold medal, that will be mine forever, and what happens tonight happens tonight. I'd love to make the podium, but para swimming has progressed so much. I'm not naive to how strong the girls are that I race against, and I love that. Like, I hate it, but I love it. And it will be a nice fight tonight to try get on that podium, but yeah, tonight I'm really excited for the last swim. Like, that's all I feel is excitement and happiness.
Yeah, well, we wish her the best. And incidentally, neither of them will be the fastest heading into tonight's final, because Spain's Anastasia Dimitriev was quickest in heat one this morning, so she will take the dominant lane number four. Roisin Ní Rian swims her second final in as many days. She line up for one of our strongest events, the S13 100 metre backstroke, within the next three quarters of an hour or so. It goes to the water at 6:51. Ní Rian now is the reigning world champion over the distance, but alongside her in lane four this evening is another dangerous medal threat. It's the defending Paralympic champion from the Tokyo Games, Gia Pergolini from the USA, and I fancy it to be a battle between the pair of them for gold and silver. Meanwhile, out at cycling's velodrome today, where they kept nice and dry, Ronan Grimes finished his run in the C4 1000 metres in a time of 1 minute 6.411 seconds. It was a new personal best for Ronan. It ranked him eighth overall. In the women's B 1000 metre time trial, Katie George Dunleavy and Eve McChrystal, they were back in tandem. They started in their heat this morning with 1 minute 9.094 seconds. That time ranked them fifth and progressed them to the medal race, which took place not so long ago. In that final, the Irish pair were second on the track as they went in reverse order. They posted a target time of 1 minute 9.447 seconds, so it was slightly slower than their morning run, and alas, it just wasn't enough to get them amongst the medals, as Britain's Liz Jordan won gold, Jess Gallagher from Australia took silver, and the defending champion Sophie Unwin from GB won the bronze. But having beaten both injury and illness in the lead up to the games, Katie George Dunleavy and Dundalk woman Eve McChrystal spoke after their final run with Darren Frehel.
Katie George Dunleavy, you gave that one hell of a go, unfortunately just a little bit short. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I think we found it was a better ride from us both in terms of technical delivery, and we gave our all, and it wasn't to be. We were hoping to go faster and we weren't. We were like, you're talking fractions of a second here, and this morning was our like second fastest time, and the last time was in Tokyo 3 years ago in the Paralympics. So, you know, you have to be happy with that, and our power was good, so it just gives us confidence, even though we were hoping for a national record.
Yeah. Well, when you're in the final, you're in the final, especially with you guys and what you've done in the past. Even Tokyo, you won a silver in your next event, which is Sunday. So this is a good foundation to get in for the weekend.
It really is. Like, as Katie said, you know, the same, more or less the same time as we're in Tokyo pre our 3K ride. Look, we're up against it. Against this time, Great Britain have three female tandems. They're like possible 1, 2, and 3. So we're going into the biggest fight of our life. Both of us are ready for it. But it is going to be a really, really tough battle against a nation that lives on a velodrome morning, noon and night. And let's call a spade, that's where we fall down, unfortunately, because we know ability and power and everything is there. It's just the lack of velodrome time, I suppose.
Can I talk about, Katie, what you've been through over the last few months? You know, I think it's a minor miracle you're even here today. Can you tell everyone at home what you've been through?
Oh yeah, end of May I was in the World Cup road race with Eve, and we fell towards the end of the latter stages of the race. We were up the road with Great Britain in first and second place, and we went round a bend, and we had a slow puncture and our bike fell, and I think my shoulder took the brunt of it, and I shattered my collarbone. So I had like 2 weeks of a week of waiting for the operation, and then I had an operation, had pins and a plate put in, and then I was trying to recover from that and trying to get back to fitness and get back on a bike and get to the training camps and do all the training that I had to do. So it was a fight to, I've been working incredibly hard, but I really was just looking at every day and what I can control, and working on everything that I could control and work on to try and get myself back on the bike and, you know, in the competition here to try and get medals. So.
Eve, does this woman ever surprise you?
Katie's just a fighter. I think she's shown that after she shattered the collarbone. I think she was also sick last week, so she's been very, not saying that, we'd 3 days in bed last week with sickness. Yeah. So I'm very proud of her to even be on the bike today.
Yeah, and why wouldn't she be? And who wouldn't bet against this pair taking a medal home from these games? Plenty more to come from them. Today was the time trial. It's the individual pursuit on Sunday. And then, of course, there's a road campaign for most of the Irish crews. And that's where we really expect them to shine. There was a second Irish crew in that time trial event this morning. Games debutants Josephine Helian from Tullamore in County Offaly, and her pilot Linda Kelly stopped the clock at 1:10.808 in their run, and they ranked 7th overall. So a really, really impressive and encouraging debut for them. There was, as I say, inclement weather here in Paris today. It forced a delay in proceedings out at the rowing this morning. When action did get underway, Katie O'Brien and Tiernan O'Donnell had to settle for 4th place in their PR2 mixed double sculls heat. Their time was 9:03.33, and they will advance now to tomorrow's repechage race, but of course will not now contest a medal. But watch out, there's big things expected from this pair in the future. Katie O'Brien and Tiernan O'Donnell, the latest big names we're expecting to progress in the world of rowing. Galway's Shona Bouquet made a dream start on the track at the Stade de France. The 20-year-old is qualified for tomorrow morning's wheelchair T54 5,000 metre final. Bouquet was squeezed into 4th position over the closing metres of today's heat, but that was more than enough to secure her return ticket to tomorrow's medal race. Switzerland's 2-time champion Catherine De Bruyner led the field home with Shona's time of 12:44.52. There was, however, elimination for para archer Kerry Leonard. She came up just short in the round of 32. She was in against the double gold medalist from the 2016 games in Rio. That was China's Zhu Jiamen. A wayward 7 in end 2 proved costly for Kerry Leonard, and although arrowing a spider in end number 5, she was edged out overall on a score of 140-135, and so ends her campaign here at Paris 2024. But she has mentioned and is already putting her name in the frame for a place with Dancing with the Stars next year. So the sky's the limit for our archer Kerry Leonard. And the other little piece of news I can bring you that's just reaching us this evening: the draw has been made for the men's table tennis class 3 event, and it's a little bit of bittersweet news for Colin Judge, who's been given a bye into the round of 32, but he will play the top seed Pang Feng of China in Monday's last 16. And to put it into context, Feng has won 4 successive Paralympic gold medals in this class. So it's going to be really, really tough for Colin Judge, but he's one real tough guy. He was, of course, one of our flag bearers in the opening ceremony on Wednesday night. We have to wait till Monday to see him, when he'll be in for the fight of his life.
Absolutely, Siobhan. Thank you so much for all of that. So much happening in the Paralympics over the next week or so, and it's been great so far, and it still could be great later on as well. If Roisin Nureen's final goes ahead on this side of 7 p.m, we're going to bring it to you here live on Game On, so do stay tuned for that. We're taking a very quick break now though, and we'll be back at talking all things football with Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan.
2FM. Game On 2FM.
Welcome back. Alan Colley is with me here, and Fergal Brennan is on the line. Fergal, Alan and I were just talking about Ivan Toney possibly going to Saudi Arabia, Osimhen going today, and I was wondering, I was like, Al, why are they all going? And he reminded me, because of the money.
yeah, I mean, that effectively is the simple and most truthful answer, particularly in the example of Ivan Toney. I don't think the Premier League interest in him has been as firm in this window as it has previously, which is a little bit of a surprise, but probably speaks to kind of underlying concerns from managers about bringing him in. There's a lot of talk about the goals that he guarantees. That's a very inaccurate science to kind of base it around. He had a fantastic season prior to his suspension. Then obviously he came back, had a pretty solid half season. But I still think that there's a lot of managers that just look at situations and obviously they're helped by data scientists and various other assistants. And they just kind of crunch the numbers and go, no. Even though obviously his price tag has dropped, his wages, not what he would get in Saudi Arabia, his Premier League level wages are not as high as other players. But I do really get the sense that a lot of clubs have just gone, yeah, he's a good option, but no. And the Saudi Arabia interest, I think maybe this is just a personal thing, but I also think that managers will be looking at that and going, if he's so willing to just take that ticket and the money that's involved, then he probably isn't the player for us. So as it stands now, there's obviously a few hours to go. It looks as if he will be moving to Al Ahly. And that effectively is probably the end of his Premier League and European career, because as we know, based on the kind of sample size that we've been working off in the last couple of seasons, players don't tend to come back.
Al, go on, remind me again how much money he's going to be getting.
I think it's reportedly 500 grand a week or something bananas like that, but they're all, that's the offers, Ossieman similar as well, and I know we're laughing and joking about it, but
it's serious money.
It's sickening.
Yeah.
It really is, Marie. Like, when you think of what's going on in the world and all, and I don't want to get too political on things and kind of, but it is, it's sickening. But that's, look, that's the world we live in nowadays. And as Fergal said, he's 28 years of age, probably his last big contract, if none of the big boys were going to come in for him, which they certainly weren't. There was a lot of talk in January that Arsenal, obviously Arsenal were crying out for a centre forward, and there was a lot of talk in January that they may go for Toney. They held off. And that interest just hasn't been there now since January. Didn't really feature in the Euros as well. Obviously, maybe if he had to play a bit more in the Euros and do well, some of the bigger clubs may have made a bigger bit deal to try and get him, but they didn't. So I've no interest in them going to Saudi Arabia. It doesn't really bother me. Like, if transfer window deadline day and you hear lads moving between clubs in England or wherever, fair enough, and I'll take note of that and take interest. Lads going to Saudi Arabia, I have absolutely zero interest in.
It doesn't feel like real life football, does it?
No, because we all know why they're going there. Yeah. And it's a bit of a nonsense. He won't feel that in terms of maybe what he's getting and what it'll mean for his family going forward, and good luck to him. But just for me, from a football perspective and from a football point of view, it just doesn't feel serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I can just picture them with the feet up pretty much all of the time. They don't really
need to.
It's
kind of done now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. You're winding down there at 28. Fergal, lots of movement for goalkeepers. It feels like it's busier than it's ever been. They're in demand, it seems.
I think it's we're seeing changes in the sense of number twos who are at big clubs and not playing enough football wanting to make a move where their kind of Premier League careers are getting revived. Obviously, Aaron Ramsdale going to Southampton is the biggest example. He's seen himself in a position at Arsenal that he wasn't first choice last season, and he certainly isn't now with David Raya being so important for what Mikel Arteta is wanting to do. Neto is... I don't think it's been completely signed off, but he's expected to come in on a season-long loan to be an experienced figure backing up Raya. So that was the end, effectively, for Aaron Ramsdale. And for me, he is a Premier League-level goalkeeper, but it's a great example of levels that we always talk about within the Premier League. David Raya is not on the level, of an Alisson or an Edison, but he is a level or two above Aaron Ramsdale. And if Arsenal and Mikel Arteta want to be challenging for the league again, then they need to have a goalkeeper that's in and around that level. Aaron Ramsdale isn't, and that's just the ruthless nature as you move from kind of the Europa League team to a top four team to a title challenging team to a title winning team. I think he'll be good for Southampton. Obviously, the likelihood is they're going to be in a relegation scrap between now and the end of the season, so he'll be pretty busy. And he is a good goalkeeper, and he's a likeable individual. Wished very well by Arsenal as he moved on. It's a situation where kind of suits everybody. Arteta, I think, has been quite uncomfortable with it, and now he's going to move on. Don't think there's going to be any change with Quinton Kelleher at Liverpool in the next few hours. They've rejected two bids from Nottingham Forest, and Arne Slot was quite firm about it when he was asked in midweek, and he said that the club also has to be selfish. Mamardashvili has been completed, but he's gone back to Valencia on loan for the season, so Slot knows Liverpool are going to have a busy campaign. They've got extra Champions League games. They've got the FA Cup. They've got the Carabao Cup. And Kelleher will continue to play that role this season. We all want to see him playing first-team football, but Alisson is committed. He's not going to Saudi Arabia. So he's one number two that won't be going anywhere. And we probably face another situation next summer of where will he go?
Al, it does have a bit of significance for our Irish goalkeepers, all right, all the movements.
Of course it does, and Bazunu was obviously the big one because they're signing Ramsdale to be the number one after paying that kind of money. And again, he's going to have to maybe fight for his place, or does he get into a scenario like as Fergal touched on there, where Kelleher has been the number two and understudy to Alisson for so long? There's obviously a big gap between Kelleher and Alisson. I don't think that gap is as big between Bazunu and Ramsdale, mm-hmm. but ultimately he'll be the number two, and there will be competition, which is good, and he can hang around and fight for his place. He will definitely this season, but you could get a scenario next year where he's looking to get out if he hasn't featured too heavily, and I don't think he will, to be honest with you, because Ramsdale will be the number one now. And it's disappointing because I suppose from our point of view, and we have the Nations League coming up and the squad being announced yesterday, and the one area that we do look at is our goalkeeper situation, thinking we're quite strong and we will be strong there for plenty of time to come because they're only young lads as well and making their way in the game. But if you have a situation where none of them are starting at their clubs, it kind of feeds into what we've seen a lot with the outfield players as well, where every time they come into a camp, into a game, or whether it's a qualifier or friendlies or whatever the case may be, that you're kind of looking at it thinking, how many minutes has he played since the last game? And when you're starting to question goalkeepers as well, if they're not playing regularly, that might become a problem down the line for the manager.
Yeah, it does make sense. The goalkeepers need to be playing really well,
don't
they?
They have to be playing, yeah.
Anybody else. A big weekend already, Fergal, in the Premier League, and it's hard to believe we've got Manchester United and Liverpool this Sunday, and for several reasons, including how Arne Slot gets on, but Ten Hag maybe more so than anybody really, because already there are question marks over his future. And it is, are we in week three off?
How long did you give it?
I was surprised that we got past the first game. We won that. I was like, they're going to be flying it now. And then last weekend I was hit back to reality again. So Fergal, how is this going to go on Sunday?
I think you're seeing a situation of two managers in incredibly different positions, because obviously going back to the end of last season, the expectation was that Erik ten Hag would be removed from his position. He was given another chance, and the season hasn't been dreadful, but it's been a real kind of burst balloon. Any sort of excitement or optimism over how he might do and how the new signings might settle in, it's been just a little bit of the same old for him. And he faces this game at the weekend under a lot of pressure. Obviously, Jurgen Klopp had a really good record against not just him, but other United managers, particularly away from home. At Old Trafford, he got some huge results there over the years. And Arne Slot is 2-for-2 as Liverpool manager. I was there for the home game against Brentford last weekend, and there was a real feel-good factor around him. The fans obviously are still kind of have Klopp in their hearts, but they've been really impressed with Arne Slot, the way that he comes across as a person and as a manager. And it's just a massive contrast to Manchester United, because I think even some hardened United fans were kind of looking at this from the perspective of, we didn't really think he was going to stay. He is. The ownership have given him all this money. He's brought in players that you look at and go, okay, let's try and get on board with this. And it's really, really difficult. And this is not just about a late winner conceded against Brighton. This is about the way they've started the season. The performances that they've put in have been really, really poor. They were fortunate to get that winner against Fulham. And personally, I think Brighton were good value for the win late on. I know United had a couple of decisions go against them, but ultimately, Brighton were pushing for it and got their reward. And that just heaps more pressure back onto Erik ten Hag.
I'd be worried for Marie. I really would. I really, really would. Because
true.
You look... You, sorry, Fergal?
Sorry, true, yeah. Just yeah, I would.
Yeah, I definitely would, Marie, because you look at the start that they've had off the back of, let's be honest, the FA Cup saved them. If they didn't win the FA Cup, and I was kind of glad in a way because they played so well, because and this isn't a good thing. When you're getting to the stage where you're feeling sorry for the manager, that's not a good place to be, Marie. And I think a lot of people were. And to see him come out fighting in some of the interviews after the cup final, and they played very well, people were nearly glad for him in that regard. But that's not a basis to build, I suppose, the future of your football club on, and a manager that you want kind of sustainability with. So the start that they've had, it was so imperative that they got off to a good start. A start like what we've seen Slot get off to, or something like that, or Arteta. It was so that you got two convincing wins and you're up and running and people are hopeful and optimistic and thinking, okay, there's change in the offing here and we've brought in new players and there's a lot to be kind of optimistic and hopeful for. But we're basically seeing the same things as what we've seen last year, and he was on the verge of losing his job last year. So if he was to lose on Sunday, and I don't really fancy them because Liverpool, I think, look electric. Mm. They've been so... Now, again, people would say, well, they've only played Ipswich and they've only played Brentford. They've absolutely dismantled them at times and they've looked so slick and sharp and fast and quick and all the things that Man United haven't looked.
But a little bit more controlled as well, Al. Sometimes when they were with Klopp, it was a bit chaotic.
Yeah.
But they do seem to have maybe tidied up that messiness a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think there's still, like, as much as we're giving them the plaudits that they deserve, I think there's still maybe a question mark about that midfield area in terms of when you play the bigger teams, the likes of City, Arsenal. But for the teams against Brentford and all these teams that they're dismantling at the moment, they'll have no issues in that kind of area of the pitch, if you like. But if they want to go and win a league, that will be something. And obviously the Zubimendi thing, he knows that, the manager himself. But just going back to United, if they lose on Sunday, the interesting thing for me was obviously the current setup, if you like, wasn't in place last year and now it's very much in place. I don't think they'll dilly-dally around Marie. And if they lose Sunday in the manner of it might be a poor performance and they look like they're miles off Liverpool and we're coming into the international break, it wouldn't surprise me if they act then, because I don't think they're going to wait around and mess around like we've seen and waste another 6 months or another year like what we've seen this season. So he needs a result bad. I'm not saying he'll get the sack, but if they don't win, I don't think they're going to mess around and wait around this new kind of current setup.
Yeah, so they probably have something in place or something.
Well, of course they already are, but I don't think they can wait another 6 months or they can wait a year. Like, is it 11, 12 years since United won the league back in 2013? And they're getting further and further away. They're not getting closer.
Fergal, are we seeing a new look Liverpool, or is it just built as Slot just built on what Klopp had already in place?
I think you're right in what you say. Like, Klopp's philosophy, there was a bit more chaos, controlled chaos surrounding it. But again, to kind of link it to the United game at the weekend, I think that just shows the level of the manager. And we, you know, we can't draw an enormous amount of conclusions from Arne Slot just yet, but he's a manager who's come in, dedicated his pre-season to getting his ideas across, getting his messages across to the players, both in terms of tactics and in terms of his expectations over attitude and application. Erik ten Hag has been given this big second chance on the back of winning the FA Cup, and there doesn't look to be any improvement and there doesn't look to be any changes. Like, I watched them over the first two games, the Fulham match and then Brighton last weekend, and they look as disjointed and lacking in kind of inspiration as they were last season. So yeah, I think for all the positives that are moving towards Arne Slot, based on a very short amount of work that he's done so far, it just looks as if it begs the question that what has Erik ten Hag done over pre-season, aside from these signings that have come in? And, you know, we have to give them a bit of time to see if they adapt and they can perform at a Premier League level. But Arne Slot, despite the fact that Liverpool have been famously quite short on transfers this summer, has revamped a squad that he's barely changed. Obviously, Chiesa's come in and there's going to be interest to see how he clicks and fits into that system. But I just think it's two stark contrasts. I don't think they'll go there on Sunday and do what Klopp has done in years gone by and win 5-0 or absolutely tear them to bits. I think there's a very good chance that they will win, and I agree with Alan that will just put more questions at Erik ten Hag's door. But they've only got themselves to blame. I think the decision to retain him after the FA Cup final was made in the kind of euphoria of winning another trophy. The people that are higher up at Manchester United are paid to make these decisions in a calculated way. He won because they played really well in that one game. That doesn't change the season that went before and the few months that have followed.
I think on that though, Fergal, to be fair to them, they were only new. There was so much uncertainty around the club. They're basically just coming in and they're trying to get fans on side. And after winning the cup, there was no way they could sack him. They couldn't.
And his interview afterwards as well.
They couldn't, Marie. They couldn't. Because, and I think that it was a lucky break that he got on timing, and timing is everything. And I think it was just a lucky break in terms of the fact that they were only in the door. Everybody looked towards he was going to get sacked. Then he wins the cup. They couldn't sack him. And now, but that's my point. It goes back to, they won't wait around. They definitely won't wait around, because if that was the decision they were already thinking about, if they lose Sunday heavily to Liverpool, curtains.
You mentioned Keza there. Where is he going to fit in, do you think, Fergal, for Liverpool?
I think possibly this is with a look to slightly further down the line. Mo Salah did an interview this week where he said that he's not thinking about his contract situation, which is obviously up at the end of the season. But I think that would probably be Keza's first choice position. We've seen a lot of change in Liverpool's attack and midfield over the last few years. That right side of the three has been the one that hasn't changed. It's been Salah's nailed on. You can stick the shirt there because he's going to be starting and he's going to be such an important player. But the sensation is that if he does extend, it probably won't be for more than a year, two at the absolute most. So I think Keza's brought in with that in mind because he's a different type of player to Salah. He likes to beat players, get kind of down the line, deliver crosses. He can still score goals. He's a kind of an unusual type of player because he's quite physical but quick. He looks a little bit ungainly the way that he moves, but he scores goals. He likes to kind of shoot on sight, quite an instinctive type of player. But I think we are seeing some of the building blocks being put in by Slot for the medium to long term because Salah, Van Dijk, potentially Trent Alexander-Arnold might not be there next season. So I think that's the move for Chiesa. I think a lot of the frustration of not getting Zubimendi and then it being viewed as Chiesa was the next best option. I don't think that's it. I don't think one was brought in because the other wasn't secured. I think this is viewed in a different way.
He's good. Great business, Marie.
Yeah, he is. It was so under the radar as well.
Brilliant player. Now, I know he suffered a bad injury last year, but he's electric. But something there, even Fergal touched on. I know he's saying Salah potentially even. I thought Salah might go with Klopp this year. But Salah has come back like a different man. And how fit he looks and sharp. And
no carbs at all, Al.
No. What would strike the fear of God into, I think, all the other Premier League teams is, he spoke in an interview during the week where he says, look, I'm not that bothered about the contract situation. I've only a year left. That'll look after itself. I'm just going to play with just
abandon.
And if that's the case, Marie, watch out, everybody, because he looks electric.
Fergal, we spoke about Ten Hag and maybe the lack of identity that around this Manchester United team, and there's comparisons already to Brighton and the job that Fabian Huseler has done. Not only a couple of games into the season, but a big test for them against Arsenal now. But we probably know a little bit more about what they're at after this game tomorrow at 12:30, actually the early game.
Yeah, and obviously they are two of the four teams that have won both games so far this season, Brighton and Arsenal. Arsenal in a very different position to Brighton, going for the title, and Brighton probably looking to push themselves back into the European places. I have been impressed with what he's done, and I think he carries himself in a much different way to Roberto De Zerbi, who I think was probably rubbing people up the wrong way towards the end of last season as results were starting to go against him, and he wasn't happy with the schedule demands that were being put on him and on the team. So Huseler, I think some of the tweaks that he's made, I think particularly João Pedro has been a really good one, that he's moved him into a more central area. He's also playing him more. De Zerbi kind of floated him around in Europe and in cup competitions and the odd league game here and there. He's a really, really talented player, and I just think Brighton are very good at, we know, recruiting players, but they're also very good at retaining players. The expectation this summer was, what if another big bid comes in for Mitoma, or I don't want to say Evan Ferguson, because you know we've kind of been down that road that it's not his time just yet. But they've kept these players, and they've kept them because there is the potential that they can push for Europe. They've got a new manager in with fresh ideas who will give chances to players, and they'll give Arsenal a real test. They've got a good record against them as well, based on the last few seasons. I honestly think for quality, this could be the game of the weekend. There'll be huge attention, obviously, on Man United Liverpool, but that's got a lot of narrative, massive rivals. In terms of if you're not an Arsenal or a Brighton fan, I think this will be the game to watch as a neutral and just sit back and enjoy.
Yeah, I was just thinking that as Fergal was about to say it, Marie, that I think this could be the game of the weekend. You know how impressed I am with Arsenal. Absolutely brilliant team. But he's done brilliant since he's come in, Huseler. And even if you look at Mitoma, obviously a lot of eyes on him in terms of how good he's been. But Minta as well coming into the team has added kind of as much of a tread on the right-hand side as what you get from Mitoma over on the left. João Pedro, Welbeck as well. And if Milner, who started every game, still playing in midfield, like, unbelievable. So I think a lot was in place for him when he came in. And sometimes I think it's good management as well just to carry on with what's been good that's already been, and you don't want to change up too much. So I think that's helped them as well, Marie. But they've been very impressive, and it'll be a really good game. I'm looking forward to it. I do think the other one that kind of caught me eye over the weekend, more in terms of, I suppose, I think there'll be plenty of goals in the attacking quality, is Newcastle and Spurs. I think that could be a cracker tomorrow. But certainly in terms of the quality, I would agree with Fergal. Brighton Arsenal will be a great game.
Any update on Evan Ferguson, bar the fact he was called into the Ireland squad and Heimer feels that he will be fit enough? There was a story earlier in the week, Fergal, that he could be linked with a move away, but that all seems to be put to bed now.
Yeah, I think kind of his real gossip page stuff that he was going to leave this summer. The injury has obviously been a big factor of it. I don't think his rehabilitation has been delayed in terms of coming back for Brighton. They just want to be very, very careful with him. He had a really limited role in pre-season. I think in terms of games, he didn't actually play at all. He was just involved in training. And since the start of the season, again, very, very cautious with him. Herzl has been optimistic about him, but he's been realistic in saying that I haven't actually seen him in match action. All the reports and all the conversations with the coaching staff has been really positive. I want to see him in action. I did think he'd get a bit of game time against Crawley in the Carabao Cup in midweek, and he didn't. I mean, it's very unlikely that he'll start tomorrow. I think you might see him on the bench, maybe cameo late on, particularly if Brighton are pushing to get something from the game. I think this is a situation where Brighton will be happy for him to go away on international duty, because he's played so little football that normally a September international break for a Premier League manager is alarm bells. The last thing they want is an important player going away. But because Ferguson's been out of action for so long, two games away with Ireland might actually be a positive for him to then come back and fight for his place in the Brighton team. Because that's what it will be. Despite how positive we are all about him, Danny Welbeck's a really assured, experienced Premier League striker. João Pedro has been excellent for them in the opening couple of weeks of the season. He will have to fight to get a starting place in that team, but he needs to get back completely fit and have Herzl his face.
He'll also have to fight against another young Irishman, Mark O'Mahony, who's doing really well there and scored against Crawley during the week, called into the 21s, Marie. So maybe we should start asking questions about him and not just about Evan Ferguson.
That's a good point. Fergal, thank you so much, as always, for all of that. Alan, before we finish up, I just want to have a quick chat about the League of Ireland. A big night tonight because Shells and Derry are both in action.
Yeah, the two leaders, Marie. It's a bit fragmented, the league at the moment, with games on the Sunday and obviously the league. So we normally, where we'd have a full round of matches on a Friday night, the five games, we haven't seen that in the last kind of 3 or 4 weeks. But tonight is a big night because the two leaders are in action. Shelburne away to Dundalk and Derry City away to Galway. Shells haven't won in 4. They need to get back on the horse, Marie. They just need a win, almost, I feel, just to get them back on that horse, because there has been question marks being asked about them at the moment. I watched them last week against Bohemians and they weren't great, to be honest with you. But if I was Damien Duff all week, I'd be re-emphasising the point that you have a game in hand, you're level on points, and there's 8-9 games to go. Just have a crack and go all out now, never mind what's gone before. Because if you were to say that to Damien Duff, that scenario at the start of the season, he would have snapped your hand off. Nobody had them down as title challenge. Maybe challengers, but not realistic challengers, hovering on the coattails and maybe Rovers and Derry. So I think, to be fair, they're in a brilliant position still. It's so important tonight, playing against a team fighting for their lives. Dundalk haven't had a game in 3 weeks. I think they'll get back on the horse tonight, Shelburne. Derry City away as well. Tough game away to Galway. That won't be easy. They got fortunate in their away game against Waterford last week. I wouldn't be surprised to see Galway get a result against Derry.
Okay, two good games to look forward to. Alan Cawley, as always, thank you so much for coming in. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be heading to Carton House to the Irish Open. We'll also be chatting to Jane Mangan, and we're hoping that Roisin Nureen's final will happen this side of 7 o'clock, and if it does, we'll be bringing you live commentary of that.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. We're turning our attention to racing, as we do every Friday, and I'm delighted to say that Jane Mangan is with us now. Jane, how are you?
I'm very well. I'm interested to hear that Shells need to get back on the horse when I'm supposed to be the one talking about horses.
You're right, and that's what they need to do. I don't know if they will now, to be honest. They're kind of...
Alan Cawley's use of language is the perfect segue. It got in the way.
It tees you up actually perfectly, because there is racing and we're looking at racing at home as well in the Curragh this weekend, Jane.
Yeah, there's domestic action in Tipperary and the Curragh. Tipperary Sunday, Curragh tomorrow, and there's is the Irish Cambridgeshire meeting at the Curragh tomorrow, and there's a lot of group racing. For me, the highlight of the day is actually coming in the two-year-old race, because I love to see these fillies. Alice Stella coming over to Mark Prescott from Newmarket. Dreamy, one from one after winning on debut at Goodwood for Aidan O'Brien. Gavin Cromwell's Fiery Lucy looks good. And Paddy Toomey's Lady Marion might be a maiden, but that was a very good run from her at Galway. So that's the Newton Anner Group 3. You've got the Snow Fairy Stakes as well, where I think Hanalia, even though she's dropping back in trip for Johnny Mercer and Ben Cohen, she ran probably better than the bare result reflects from the Irish Oaks. She was a long way back when you got to me, and subsequent Yorkshire Oaks winner Content finished first and second. This filly was making up ground, and she's getting the £7 allowance from her older fillies. But I suppose the main race of the day that we have to discuss is the Paddy Power Supporting Cancer Trials Ireland Irish Cambridgeshire Handicap. Huge field of 24 go to post. And Colin Keane is currently riding the favourite State Actor. But I would take him on with his father's genuine article. Gerry Keane has had a magical year with Crystal Black and looks like it could continue with that horse going to Melbourne. Well, genuine article could make the year even better, because his weight is so light, so he's carrying 8 stone 8, that Colin can't take the ride, which means James Ryan, this year's leading champion apprentice at the moment, it comes in for the ride to take £3 off. So I think genuine article could upset Colin's apple cart in the Irish Cambridgeshire.
Okay, so there's lots to look forward to this weekend. So not only the Curragh, though, there's a bit of racing in Tip.
There is this racing in Tipperary, but I also want to take an opportunity. We're 2 weeks out. Hard to believe it's the 30th of August, but we're 2 weeks out from Irish Champions Weekend at Leopardstown and the Curragh, 14th and 15th, Saturday and Sunday. It's, for me, the biggest weekend of the Irish racing calendar in terms of flat racing. And today it was confirmed that the Japanese runner Shin Emperor was going to come across. He's currently in Paris, but he's going to come to Dublin to contest the Irish Champion Stakes. William Haggis's ever exciting Economics is coming across. Clive Cox may well travel, a ghostwriter who ran so well to be placed in the Judmont International at York last week. They're formidable overseas challengers, but the home team is looking very strong. Today Aidan O'Brien confirmed that last year's winner Auguste Rodin, the winner from 2 years ago, Luxembourg, and the Great Voltigeur winner, Los Angeles, all likely to run. And possibly, if you throw into the mix John Murphy's White Birch, you have one of the races of the season. That's at Leopardstown. And then, of course, on the Sunday at the Curragh, you've Kyprios in the St. Ledger, top-class horse. You've Holly Doyle possibly coming over to ride Bradzell, who won the Nunthorpe last week at York, top-class horse in the Flying Five. And the two-year-olds, Babouche, Red Letter, Fairy Godmother, Bedtime Story, Rashbar, Whistle Jacket, Delacroix, all with those names in the basket. If anybody is looking for a day's racing, Champions Weekend is coming up.
Well, Jane, you tweeted about this today, and I'm going to read it to you. You said the Irish Champion Stakes is one of the most prestigious races in Europe. Yoshito Yahagi knows it, but do the people of Dublin, 2 weeks out from Ireland's biggest flat festival, yet the general narrative is Arc Focus, Step Up Leopardstown and the Curragh.
Yeah, that was a little bit of my frustration, in that in racing, when a horse is impressive, whether it's like York or Goodwood or whatever, people start talking about the Arc or the Prix de l'Opera or the Prix de la Faria, the Jean-Luc Lagardère, all these major races that happen in Paris in October. But what they really should be talking about is the good races that we have, the Group 1 races that we have here at home, because many of those good horses are Irish. So, look, I'm all for promoting how well Irish horses do abroad, but we stage some of the best races in Europe and in the world here at home. And that's what I hope people will appreciate. And I hope, if you can't go, that you'll tune into RTÉ to watch it.
So do people need to be doing a little bit more, though? Should we need to be doing more promotion of weekends like that one coming up?
Yeah, and I think that's why I wanted to mention it today, because it's a collaborative effort from everyone in racing. I don't think anybody rests on their laurels. I think we all try and do our best for the sport, but I would hope that when it comes to the big highlights, whether it's the summer highlights or the Dublin Racing Festival in February or Christmas at Leopardstown, that we all just try and push the apple cart a bit more. And that was me just getting the conversation happening, because I felt maybe we were not sitting on our hands, but I think it got people talking.
Okay, Jane, thank you very much for all of that. We'll see how it proceeds over the next couple of weeks and how much build up there is. But you've marked our card now, so we'll all be looking forward to it. So give us your tip for the weekend.
It is Gerry Keane's in the Irish Cambridgeshire. It's genuine article for me.
Okay, Jane, thank you so much for that. We're going to take another quick break, but do stay with us because we'll be heading to Carton House. Greg Allen is at the KPMG Women's Irish Open and he will have the latest for us from day two.
RTE 2FM.
Comedy
on 2FM.
Milton Jones. His brand new show, Ha Milton.
I'm a bit of a lazy writer, according to my children, QWERTY and F12.
Live across Ireland this September. 18th, 3 Olympia Theatre, Dublin. 20th, Opera House, Cork. And September 21st, Leisureland, Galway.
Last year I went on a ballooning holiday. Put on 4 stone.
Tickets available now from Ticketmaster.ie. Milton Jones. A whole new show of daftness. You know it makes sense.
Comedy
on 2FM.
If you're not with UNO Energy, chances are you're paying more than you need to for your electricity. As Ireland's newest energy provider, we offer Ireland's cheapest electricity rate, saving our customers up to 573 euro a year. So if you want to pay less for energy, simply pay a visit to unoenergy.ie and sign up for big savings with smaller bills. With UNO Energy, you just know. UNO Energy fixed discount rate EAB 1240 euro. For T's and C's and rates, see unoenergy.ie. Suppliers pricing may change.
Why wait any longer for a change of scene? Why wait one more week for a world-class cocktail in a rooftop hot tub? Why wait another day for Art Deco elegance and live jazz? For a spa resort with a therapy menu as long as your arm? For dinner at a Michelin Guide recommended restaurant? Why put your next short break on the long finger when it's just a small step to a giant adventure in Northern Ireland? And you can book it now at discovernorthernireland.com.
What can you bag at Maxall? Whether you're on the go or need some everyday essentials for the house, you'll find bags more to keep you going in Maxall.
The Laura Fox Show. On today's show, Kaylee Trapp told me about her St. Anthony alternative.
So if anything goes missing in our house, everyone's like, sure, ring the man who finds things. I was in Belfast University and a fella told me that he lost his USB with his dissertation on it. And I said, ring the man who finds things. Lo and behold.
No.
Yeah, I never asked him what he got, but we found his dissertation anyway.
It's 2FM, the Laura Fox Show. Weekdays from 9. It's almost 7 o'clock with Vitabiotics. The Well Kid range provides essential nutrients for growing children, from vitamin D to omega 3. Well Kid, nutritional support for growing kids. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. I'm delighted to say that we are heading to Carton House to Greg Allen, who has been watching the KPMG Women's Irish Open for the day. Greg, it's a day two. I've seen quite a number of the pictures that have been on the TV today, but it's looked fabulous. But what's the golf been like?
Well, it's a fabulous day. It's been a sunny day. We started off with fog, actually, so we had a half an hour delay at the start of the day, so they might struggle to get everybody in before it gets dark for the second round. But anyway, it's been, I have to say, something of a flattish day for the Irish Challenge. And when we're talking about the Irish Challenge, we are talking about primarily Leona Maguire. She's very much still in the picture here. She had a round of 72 today, added to her 70 from yesterday. Two bogeys in a round today, but three birdies, and she birdied from 8 feet in the last to at least get under par figures for the day. So back on four under par, she is 6 shots off the lead, and she's just outside the top 20. That doesn't sound too prospectful, but it's nothing that a round of 65 or 66 tomorrow won't remedy pretty shortly. But it was just a day which was far from bad for her. Her ball striking was pretty good, but really going through the two rounds that she's played so far, it has been the case of not enough birdies. Now, six birdies might sound quite a lot, but at the level that they're making birdies around her, that's been pretty ordinary. And also, four of her birdies have come on par fives. Only two have come on either par fours or par threes. So that's not like Leona Maguire. But she wasn't without hope yesterday, and or today, I should say, when I spoke to her. And she knows what the task is over the weekend. She needs to shoot two low rounds.
Greg, I'm going to pause this for just a second, if you don't mind, because we're going to cross over to the live commentary of Roisin Nureen, who is in her Paralympic final now.
25-metre mark, but it's pretty close. In fact, Sabalateva, lane number one, is also involved here. But Pergolini is going to turn in the lead. Nureen is in second place now. Pergolini's got quite a distance between her and the rest. rest of the field is the battle for Nereen now, is between her and the rest of them to take. Is it a silver? Is it a bronze? Is it a medal of any kind? The world record's on the thread. Pergolini holds that as 64-64. Roisin Nereen is in second place and on her way to a medal for Ireland. Are we going to get a world record and an Irish medal in the same event? It's going to be outside the world record, but it's going to be Roisin Nereen who takes silver for Ireland. It's our first medal at the Paralympic Games. Brilliant from Pergolini, but brilliant from Roisin Nereen. In second place takes that silver. Pergolini, overcome with emotions, gives the big hug to Nereen, and it was Gigli, the Italian, taking bronze. But Pergolini was the class of the field. We knew that coming in. 104.93 is just outside the world record. Roisin Nereen, 107.27. It's a silver for Ireland, James.
What an incredible swim. Our first medal of this Paralympics. So well deserved by Roisin. Great swim. Took it out strong, stuck with Pergolini for about 30 metres, and then just the class act of Pergolini is in this event. She powered through the turn. Little bit worried myself, I had my hands on my head for Roisin. About 15 metres after the turn, that Carlotta Gigli started to reel her in, and the Australian, the far lane, or the Spanish swimmer, apologies, in the far lane, started to reel her in as well. But where Roisin really nailed it was 75
absolutely
meters.
Brilliant there for Roisin Nereen, and John Kenny bringing us the commentary from the Paralympics in Paris, and a silver medal for Roisin there. Back to Greg though at the golf. Greg, we were going to hear from Leona, but it didn't work out for us there with the race coming at the same time. But how do you think she's going to fare over the next couple of days?
She probably needs two rounds in the region of 66-68 to have a chance, I think, of winning. And, you know, she is only here to win. She's not here to finish second. She was fourth here 2 years ago, or in Dromoland 2 years ago. So she needs something low both days over the weekend. She's admitted that herself. Just one other good, really, story here, and it comes via an 18-year-old Leaving Cert student, Anna Abom. She shot around a 72 yesterday and 71 today. Now, she's an amateur player. She hasn't actually had a very good season, but she's brought her best form here. And she might be, you know, somewhat slight in stature, but my gosh, she's played brilliantly. She's only had three bogeys in two rounds, and she's on three under par, and she will make the cut. And along with, at the moment, Leona Maguire, they are the only two definite Irish players around for the weekend, because on one over par, Lauren